So one thing I would encourage all of you to do is, if you're trying to rally around groups and what that looks like, come up with what you define groups to be. If you could say in one simple sentence, what do you hope will come out of groups when people meet together? Put it down on paper. And then every time you get a chance to get in front of anyone in your church, whether it's from the stage, whether it's in one of the few groups that does exist, just tell people, this is why we exist. This is why we do what we do. What it does is it gives people a reason to get together. It gives people a reason to not only get together, but to rally behind why you do what you do, to know why you do what you do. And it creates momentum for existing groups as well as for future groups. Future groups will start to happen because, and they will form because now there's a vision behind doing what you're doing, instead of simply getting together because it's the thing that you always have to do or it's the religious duty. You have purpose behind it now. That's an important thing to do. And you'll be surprised at casting vision and putting on paper why you do what you do, how much that will actually create momentum and create growth for groups.
This is the Build Groups podcast, where we equip and resource group leaders and pastors in the local church to make disciples with one another together. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Build Groups podcast. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host. I have a great guest for us here today who I'm going to let introduce himself in just a minute, Dave McPherson. He is the associate pastor at First Baptist Tulsa. He also helps with the Bivo Pastors Conference with Oklahoma Baptist, and then also in their local association there, the TMBN, the Tulsa Metro Baptist Network, where he helps aid in that. And a lot of what I think we're going to find that we dig into today with Dave is, man, there is a long history and a lot of just, by God's grace, success in the group's ministry and the leader production, and some of the words that I've heard him use, like leadership factory. That's just a preview of some of the great conversation I know that we will get to have that I've had with him prior in other situations. So, Dave, man, how are you doing today?
Bro, thank you so much for having me on the show. Yeah, I'm doing well. So, things are going good here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We had a little bit of a cold front blow through, but we're hanging it in.
Well, good, good. It is a brisk 70 degrees here in February in Texas. Ooh. It's almost a little too cold that I'm missing that Texas 112 degree heat.
That is almost like my childhood growing up in Phoenix, where we had a brisk 95 degrees in February.
Oh, you got
cold fronts.
You've had both extremes. I got a lot of respect. I'm from Pennsylvania, right? So I left the
cold. Okay, so
we flipped. Cold, we did cold. The opposite, man. Yeah. So I love the heat because I grew up in the cold. But man, Dave, tell us a bit about yourself, your ministry background, your family, some of your faith background, maybe, and then a hobby.
Yeah. Okay. So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. Born and raised there, came to faith at an early age. My parents didn't go to church for a long time, so part of my formation was just learning how to connect with God apart from church, and then really valuing church. And we did get to go. Went to Baylor University for grad school. There I met my wife, Ginger. We've been married for 17 years, and we have three beautiful children. Addie is our oldest at 11. Christopher is our middle child at 9, and Jamie's our youngest at 7. So we've got a full house. Life is fun around our world.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, I've got three, and some of you, you got it. You got it going on there, man. That's fun. So, tell us about your ministry background a little bit.
So yeah, so I started off in ministry actually when I was 14. I picked up the guitar and decided I wanted to lead worship, and ended up getting involved in my youth group leading worship. Put a band together, went on tour, tried the musician thing, decided that wasn't for me, but felt through that God was calling me to the local church and invest there. And so I dove in quick as a worship pastor, found myself as a worship guy doing discipleship more than just doing worship, because part of what made the team really work well was not just simply practicing music, but diving deep into God's word together, learning how to pray together, build community together. And finding unity through that was the vehicle through which we could engage with God. But something in that also told me what we're doing isn't just about me being the one guy on the stage. I need to equip other people to be able to do what I'm doing in order for my ministry to carry on. And so even in music, I learned how to pass on playing bass, playing guitar, playing drums, to teach different instruments, but also teach principles of what does it mean for us to go to God and take other people with us. And that transition into a few years ago, I took a job as a worship pastor and associate pastor for a church plant in Phoenix. And of course, church plants, we were talking before we started the podcast, and Adam, you're a part of a church plant as well. For those who have been with church plants, you know, it's a ton of work, but you're equipping leaders left and right. You're raising people from the ground up. And so everything I was doing was about developing leaders and growing people from wherever they were, their spiritual walk, to be mature enough that they could lead other people and quickly lead them to a new season of growth. From there, came out here to Tulsa and felt like part of my calling was to help this wonderfully rich history church, First Baptist Tulsa, that was started in 1897, help it reignite a passion for both evangelism and discipleship, because it had done both well over the years, but at the point where I entered in, it was just kind of coasting along and needed somebody to help encourage them and foster them and grow those things. So I found a lot of success in doing just that.
Nice. And I love your mentality, because I think it can be very rare at times for a worship pastor to have that focus of development and replication to, in a sense, in a literal sense, right, make room on the stage for others to perform and use their ministry gifts and to see God use that. I just think, man, I love that was where you were and you saw, and then you stepped into that and implemented. And now the Lord's right brought you into discipleship and groups ministry. And so right now, what do you oversee at First Baptist Tulsa?
What do I oversee is probably a better question. I've got my hands in quite a few things. I'm coaching more than half the staff. So I'm checking in with our youth pastor to see how he's doing, checking with our children's minister to see how he's doing, and coaching them and growing and raising up leaders and developing volunteers, as well as developing children and pouring into them, overseeing our preschool minister, overseeing our volunteer director and missions pastor and senior adults minister. So I've got my hands in quite a few pockets while I'm also overseeing groups and directly overseeing folks that are leading groups. We have a total of probably about 200 volunteers that are involved in groups ministry at First Tulsa. As of those 200 people that are involved, we have 40 group directors and their spouses. In addition to those, there's a lot of other roles that are played with teachers. Some groups have teachers that are rotating through and have three or four teachers. Some have just one teacher and one director, and those are separate categories. And we found that's actually helpful to have somebody that's more of an administrator that can walk people through the process of here's what the group time looks like together versus someone who's actually teaching and walking through the teaching time together. And we have, of those 40 groups, we have 6 that are off campus, 34 that are on campus. What I mean by that is we have a big part of being in a traditional church. We have a lot of Sunday school classes, what a traditional church would call them. Sure. We call them community groups. So a lot of what we do revolves around the Sunday school hour between our first service and our second service. But we have started breaking out to getting groups in the community. We've got a Thursday morning Bible study. We have a Wednesday lunch Bible study. We've got a Friday night in-home Bible study. We have a Monday night in-home Bible study. We have a lunch group that meets right after church off campus, and they talk about the sermon. And we've got a group that meets over lunch on Thursdays as well.
Wow. Yeah, you guys got a lot going on. That's great. The amount of different groups and where they meet and when they meet and the multiplication of that. That's incredible. So now you said you have about 34 that are on campus. You have about 6 that are off campus. What is like the average size group for an on campus, and then maybe about the average size for one of your off campus?
That's a great question. So on campus, we have wide variety. I would say if we were to average all the numbers across the board, we're probably averaging 20. But that's because we have 3 groups that are really, really big. And then you break that down from there, the average group is probably closer to 12 or 15. Okay. So the three groups that are really, really big, primarily they're senior groups, they're older groups, and they're just used to meeting together in large numbers because that's how they did Sunday school for years and years. So our largest group runs 85, 90 on a weekend.
Yeah.
We have a group of then, you know, moving on down from size wise. There's a couple of groups of millennials, or older Xers that are in their 30s and 40s. And most of them really are in their 20s. And that's great that we've got that going. Have groups that are smaller groups and that are 10 or 15 together, 20 together, so they can get to know each other, so they can invest in each other, as well as take that time to challenge each other to grow in their walk.
There is a volunteer crisis in the church today. What are you doing about it? Build Groups Coaching and Consulting helps churches build a custom, discover, develop, and deploy new volunteers and leaders process to increase your volunteer base by 30 to 50% in 6 to 12 months. We do this with churches over and over again, all shapes and sizes, all across the country. To learn more about how we can change your ministry world, deepen your bench so that you never feel the pinch or pain of not having enough volunteers or leaders in your ministry again, go to buildgroups.net/consult. Yeah, I hear you saying, so there's several things I hear you saying about what they're doing in those groups and the growing part and the meeting and the gathering and the fellowship. And so like for y'all's groups, and this might vary whether it's on or off campus, but I'm curious, what purpose does groups or do groups fulfill in your church? Like, what do you hope? Hey, this is the purpose that we've laid out for our leaders that we want them to fulfill.
So at a 50,000 foot level, the vision that I've cast such for groups is simply that we exist to develop Jesus followers who impact their families, their neighbors, their city, and the world with the hope of the gospel. So my number one goal through groups is that we would become an engine through which we know how to multiply our faith. But in order to do that, we need to know how we can grow in our faith ourselves. We need to know what is the gospel message, what is the good news, and then encourage each other to grow in boldness, to be able to take steps out, to have conversations with people.
I love it. So like, what are some of the outcomes as people get in group, they attend group faithfully, they are growing in group, they're doing all the things that you're asking them to do, right, as part of being of a group. What are some of those outcomes you hope that maybe at a more individual level you're hoping are produced or result in a person's life from them having that activity and participation?
So I'm hoping internally what's going on within that individual believer is they're growing in spiritual maturity. They're learning how to read their Bible and pray. A term that I like to use a lot is self-feeders. We want to produce people, not just they're able to pick up one of the quarterlies and just read, and that's all they're doing for their time with God, but they're actually picking up the Bible and they're daily engaging with God and they're learning how to grow in spiritual disciplines. Not only that, but they're not afraid to go talk to their neighbors and say, hey, do you know about Jesus? If they do, that's great. But if they don't, then invite them to church or keep having conversations, keep building bridges, invite them over for meals and talk about your faith. Don't simply just sit on it and be an island unto yourself or just go to the hole and cuddle of the church. And that's all there is to it. I also hope as a part of that, they're going to want to be involved in more than just what's going on with the group. They're going to want to invest in the larger life of the church community. And we've seen all three of those things happen over the last 6 years since I've been invested at First Baptist Tulsa.
Man, praise God. I see this, the self-feeding, it's the service to others, it's the sharing with the outside, right?
Yes.
And so that's great. You're hitting all those major bases. And so like, as people are doing that, it seems that almost implicit, and I'm picking this up implicitly, so I'm trying to actually pull it out for our audience and listeners to connect with that explicitly with what you're saying, is more than just an assumption. But as people get into those groups, it sounds like they are being trained in that setting, in a sense, to go and have those conversations with You know, so what does that look like, or how do you see that happening within the context of your groups? I'm hearing it again implicitly, but I just want to pull that string a little further and be like, man, what's back
there? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So every year we set aside some time where I ask the community groups to step back from whatever they're teaching to focus on some form of evangelistic training. And so we spend a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, hunkering down and looking at whether it's Greg Laurie's book, Tell Someone, whether it's the three circles that Dan created a few years ago, or it's some other method. I don't care what it is. We just need to get in the habit of being familiar with what the gospel is and encouraging each other to take bold steps of faith, to get out in front of people and have conversations about Jesus. Because once we start having those conversations, we want to keep having them. But if we never have them, kind of keeps our faith stale in some ways as well. And so it's important for us just to keep that in the forefront of our minds. And I've intentionally set aside time every year just for that as a part of the process. And then another vehicle to keep that in motion is, you know, 3-4 times a year, of course, Christmas Eve, Easter, two gimmies. In the fall, typically we do some kind of outside the box sermon series. So this last year we did the gospel according to the Beatles. A few years ago, we did Gospel According to Garth Brooks, where we literally just pick songs. Our lead pastor would pick songs from top charts and say, okay, here's the main theme of this song. But how does the Bible address that same idea, that same theme? And it's a great attractional series for people who know nothing about Jesus but love the Beatles.
Yes.
And they walk in the doors of the church. But to give the invitations to people in the groups and say, look, you do something with this. We've been talking about evangelism. Now go walk over to your neighbor. Take this card and say, man, you know, I care about you. Our church is doing something with really cool music. Come on, come hang out and let's see what's going on.
That is brilliant. I've not heard of a sermon series like that. And along the lines of what you were saying, and as we kind of pulled that thread out a little bit more, well, what's that look like whenever people are, you know, what's actually happening inside you know, the room where that training is happening and the equipping. And what I heard you say, a key word was there was intentional time set out specifically 4 times a year where it's pushing them. And you're using stuff from the stage, from, it sounds like, group curriculum and conversations that are pushing people in that direction. And so, man, that is done. How do you train small group leaders and teachers? Group Leader Training, a biblical manual for small group leaders and teachers in the local church, is a holistic 5-session training based on Acts 2:42-47 that trains group leaders to deepen community, encourage growth, mobilize group members to service and sharing of their faith with unbelievers. Course videos, belief assessments, and more resources are provided online with special access through the workbook. 50% off bulk orders is available exclusively on our website. To learn more, go to buildgroups.net/coming soon. Now, I want to zoom in a little bit more from the global view, more into the personal view and into you, actually, Dave. And so as a associate pastor, what is your personal involvement in belonging to a group in the church? You know, I think it's very often that you can see that we can many times be running groups ministry, but are we a part of that group's ministry in either leading or receiving the benefits? So, man, what's that look like for you as your personal involvement? And then what can this look like for other staff and pastors at churches?
Oh, bro. So it's totally important for us to be involved in community. We can only lead where we've been. If we're saying from the stage, let's get involved in community, but we're not doing it ourselves, it doesn't do any good for anyone. All it does is say, it's for you, but it's not for me. I'm somehow exempt from it. So other people then vote with their feet and say, well, I'm exempt from it too. I intentionally invest in community groups, in a specific group. My wife and I attend one of the 34 groups that meet on campus. In addition to that, because there's only so much intimacy and transparency you can get as a pastor with other folks in your church. You want to be vulnerable. You want to be transparent, but you also want to be real and say, man, I'm struggling today because of this issue or whatever's going on. you can't always have that conversation. So I've also created a covenant group with some guys that are in the same seat that I'm in other churches in the Tulsa metro area. And I have intentionally built relationship with a guy from South Tulsa Baptist Church, a guy from Battle Creek Church, and a guy from First Baptist Jenks. And, you know, we meet together once a month or so, and we're intentionally praying for each other and sharing what's working, what's not working, what's going on personally. How can we encourage each other to keep each other going? There's something about, if I'm asking people to get involved in community, I should be doing it personally. I should be investing at the level I'm asking other people to invest in so that they can get to experience the fullest, but I can too. Because the truth is, groups produce incredible benefits for us to grow closer to God and to produce in us a greater sense of maturity and a greater sense of wanting to multiply our faith into others. So I probably threw a lot more out there than what you wanted, but there's that.
I love the passion. No, right on. I could not agree more with you, Dave. That is phenomenal. I love, because it's not just the people within your church, but you have found people outside of your church, other pastors that you know that can relate to you and connect with you and understand certain things that you say when you say, and also probably not question your heart's motives whenever you do, and you are that transparent, you step into that vulnerability, and for them to get it and go, I instantly know what you're talking about. So I think there is a ton of wisdom, and I would encourage you listeners, those of you who are in a similar role, to maybe try and do that with where you are, people there. And if it's, there's just not a lot of people in your area geographically, whereas as dense of a place as Tulsa or Dallas or wherever you might be, Zoom groups are still in, even though COVID's out. Okay. So,
yes, absolutely. Zoom is an easy way to connect, and there's places to connect with other leaders. I think small group network is a great place where you can actually engage with other folks. Just simply even, you know, go look on Facebook or go through Google small group leaders networks, and you're going to find a ton of spaces. Now, maybe I'm stealing your term, because this is what you do as well, Adam. So Adam also has built his own network, and I'd encourage you to check with him too.
Hey, we are all working and moving in the same direction and the same team. And so any way we can help, like, that's the goal, right? And so I love it. I love connecting people with one another that I may never have an ongoing relationship with, because man, like, that's the kingdom. And I'll have those relationships for eternity as brothers, sisters in Christ. And so let's move to our quick hitter questions, Dave. So quick hitter in 60 seconds or less. What is an area of your group's ministry right now that is strong? And then what is one area you desire to improve on over the next, you know, whatever, couple months or year or 2 years?
So we found like incredible success in the last year or so with a couple of niche groups. We've got a group that we started for introverts, that they're just a bunch of introverts that get together in a room together and crazy enough to actually talk. You'd think if they're introverts, they wouldn't. We also have a group that's running a version of Celebrate Recovery. They call themselves Chainbreakers, and they're doing a great job of helping each other grow in community and walk away from whatever addiction that they're wrestling through, following a biblical version of the 12 steps. But those niche groups I found a lot of success in. And what do I want to improve in? Any one of us as groups leaders, we're looking for ways to raise the bar for leaders and multiply leaders more rapidly. You know, one thing I'm challenging leaders on currently is identify who are a few folks that are up and coming that you feel like have the potential to lead, but they need something. Let's get them the tools that they need in order to grow. And there are so many good resources that are out there. But part of that, I also, a handful of times a year, intentionally invite 12, 15 people into a group training session where I can help to multiply what's going on in them and call that out in them, but also pass on what I've learned about developing groups and multiplying groups.
Yes, that is awesome. So one thing, listeners, we're going to make sure of, that there is something in the podcast notes of what Dave just referenced so that you're able to connect with him and you can learn more about it. If you're in the area or you want to connect with him about some of that, we're going to give you the opportunity to be able to do that and to just pick his brain of some of the things that he's doing there to help reproduce into other ministries and other people. Because one of the big reasons as well, I wanted to talk with Dave, I wanted to have him on here, is because when we were discussing your groups, I mean, you've been very humble. You have not said it. I was waiting, but now I can't wait anymore. I'm just going to say it, man. that, and you can correct if I get any of the numbers wrong. Okay. So I'm doing it purely on memory. I'm not using a preacher's license to just, you know, inflate or, you know, anything like that. I'm trying to go off memory. Where do you find new volunteers and leaders? Build Groups offers a one-time 2-hour discover exercise virtually or in person with your church staff and team, and help you build a long list of potential new volunteers and leaders you can invite and onboard into a training process to deploy them into the specific ministry area that they are called to. We've helped churches build a list of nearly 400 names. If you would like to do the same and not feel the pinch and pains of volunteer holes every week, go to buildgroups.net/CI, select Discover Exercise, submit the form, and we'll fill your ministry bench. When we had spoken, your group's ministry, I believe, had doubled in a very short period of time. You had 100% of your people in groups that were in a worship service, and I think you did that at your church in Phoenix. I believe at First yes. Tulsa, you're experiencing similar success. Man, elaborate on that for me.
So yeah, in Phoenix, the church plant that I was a part of, we grew groups, from nothing, a church plant, you're growing from ground zero. We had at one point 120% of our Sunday morning attendance in community groups.
Ooh, yes.
They really were the front door of the church. They were all meeting in homes midweek, and we were inviting neighbors who didn't know Jesus to come to groups. And then from that, they were starting to enter into church. They were hearing the gospel. They were getting saved and getting baptized. Man, that was a fun season. But then came here to Tulsa. We had 50% of our church in groups on a Sunday morning. Average attendance of the church pre-COVID was about 1,350. Right now, our average attendance in person is about 1,100. And we currently have between 93 and 98% of our Sunday morning attendance in community groups.
That is phenomenal. I don't know of many churches that can say that they have that ratio of people in groups versus there on a Sunday morning service. And for you to not just do that at one church, but at two different churches, and to see the Lord bless that and to give growth to the seeds that you've planted, you've been watering faithfully. I just, you know, there's something there. And so, man, I love it. So now, this is called the Build Groups Podcast. What is one thing you would encourage our listeners, our audience, a church to do to build groups in their local church?
Well, I would say try and define, nail down what it is you believe groups should do. Put it into one sentence if you can. And then every time you get a chance to communicate with your church family what that one thing is, do it. Do it over and over and over again. You're casting vision for why groups exist, why you do what you do. That'll catch wind in the few groups that you do have. But it'll also create momentum for new groups to start saying, we can rally behind this thing, whatever this thing is. For me, for us, what we've done, we've created momentum towards not only growing for ourselves, but for reaching out to lost people and saying, groups exist for us to grow. So one thing I would encourage all of you to do is, if you're trying to rally around groups and what that looks like, come up with what you define groups to be. If you could say in one simple sentence, what do you hope will come out of groups when people meet together? Put it down on paper. And then every time you get a chance to get in front of anyone in your church, whether it's from the stage, whether it's in one of the few groups that does exist, just tell people, this is why we exist. This is why we do what we do. What it does is it gives people a reason to get together. It gives people a reason to not only get together, but to rally behind why you do what you do, to know why you do what you do. And it creates momentum for existing groups as well as for future groups. Future groups will start to happen because now there's a vision behind doing what you're doing instead of simply getting together because it's the thing that you always have to do or it's the religious duty. You have purpose behind it now. That's an important thing to do. And you'll be surprised at casting vision and putting on paper why you do what you do, how much that will actually create momentum and create growth for groups.
That's good. I love it. So the reason why we're doing all this, and we talk about this, right, the strategy, the structure, some of the metrics and the numbers to keep just a good watchful eye as a shepherd on the souls of the sheep, is we're striving after life transformation in people's lives. And we want to see that change occur, not just that they stay stuck in the misery of their sins and the repercussions they produce, but rather that they progress. And so with that, in closing, our last question here, Dave, what's one of the best group life stories you can think of that you would share with us of witnessing a person's life transform, or just hearing about it maybe through your ministry of a life's person transformed, even if it wasn't you firsthand? What's that story?
Yeah, so goodness. When I first came to the church, there was a lady that would sit. We have a bus station that's just around the corner from our church. We're a downtown church. And so we get all kinds of crazy people that are floating around the building. When I first moved here 6 years ago, there was a lady that was homeless that would sleep somewhere between the bus station and our parking lot. And she would cuss out people as they were walking in, literally cuss out
okay.
people. Well, somewhere in the last few years, she got sober. She was an alcoholic and she got sober. Someone invited her to our church. She ended up at one of the shelters nearby. And so she got a bus ride from that shelter to come down to our church. She got plugged into the recovery community group, Chainbreakers community group. Last July, she was baptized. She said yes to Jesus for the first time. She got baptized. She now has a full-time job and she's contributing back to society. This woman that would cuss people out as they were coming into church is now a part of our church family and growing closer to God and inviting as many people as she can to come to church to find hope and find help and find healing.
Wow. That is
so, dude,
incredible story. I've heard some good stories.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything that like night and day in who we've spoken with, who we've talked to. She goes from homeless, alcoholic, cussing people out on the street to into your church, saved, employed. I mean, just like total 180 radical
yeah.
life.
Yes.
Wow. Man.
Dude. It's awesome.
That is incredible, man. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that story. That is a great way to bookend our conversation, our episode today.
And I will say for those that are listening, if you don't have any stories that are that dramatic, that's okay too. You don't know what's happening behind the scenes. The truth is that through groups, or maybe even through somebody in your group having an invitation, handing an invitation to somebody or praying for somebody that they know that's lost behind the scenes, you may never get to see the end result of what's happening in that person's life, but God is working on them. And there's so many stories, so many times where God uses the faithfulness of one person to pray or to invite someone to church, and they hold on to that for years, or the Holy Spirit starts working on them behind the scenes. And next thing you know, so they've ended up at a different church, but they've said yes to Jesus and they're growing closer to God. Someday you're going to get to see the fruit of that and the impact of that. So don't get discouraged if you hear a great story, but you don't see a great story in your own church, because there are stories that are happening. Sometimes you just can't necessarily see them.
Absolutely. That's a good word, Dave. And I would encourage you, if you do get to encounter a great story, steward that story well and share it with your pastor, with the people in your group.
Yes.
You have a responsibility to celebrate what God's done with God's people and do that. And so be encouraged. Don't be discouraged, as Dave said. And as we wrap up our episode today, Dave, thank you so much for spending a bit of time with us and coming on here to share about you and your ministry.
Absolutely. Glad that I could do that, man. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, no brainer. It was a no brainer, man. So thankful you're here and you came. And those of you listeners, audience, tuning in here, I'm going to put a little bit of notes at the bottom of this episode that you can go and find a little bit more out about Dave that we'll put there. But this is the Build Groups Podcast. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope this was equipping for you to spark, start thought trails, not answer all your questions, maybe a lot of them, but not every single one, to go search out for more. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.